And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. Today on the show, we're going to start by asking a very important question about pop culture of all kinds. How long is too long? Now, what we mean by that is some things go on just perhaps a little bit longer than you would like. We're going to try to find that magic moment when the good becomes the not so good. After that, we're going to play a game, which I have devised to stump the panelists today. And then we will, as always, conclude with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I edit movies coverage and, you know, the little stuff like that.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, it's awfully good to see all of you around the table, as always, joining me for this wonderful discussion, which we hope will not get too long. Now, Stephen, you were the one who sort of proposed this topic, so why don't you give me a sort of a pressy, if you will.
Was that Latin?
Or something. Of how you arrived at this idea.
Well, I write about music all day, and, you know, I've noticed over time that the standard length of an album has sort of shifted from sort of era to era, often based on the format in which music is delivered. So when albums were on vinyl, you were limited by what you could fit on a vinyl record. Mm-hmm. When the transition to CDs happened, you had a lot of artists, Red Hot Chili Peppers, who would try to stuff like 77 minutes, half of which was garbage, onto a CD, because you figure, well, you're going to fill the CD.
Sure.
But over time, it's kind of drifted to like 45 minutes. And now, because of iTunes, because of the kind of ephemeral nature of albums, I feel like they've actually gotten shorter still. And so now the standard length of an album, I think, is roughly, based on the records that I get in, roughly like 10, 11 songs, 37 minutes. So I've noticed over time, there are sort of standard lengths for various pop culture. And also, you know, I've noticed that, you know, different reality TV shows.
I was just going to say, don't front. I know how you came up with this topic.
Okay, the way I came up with this topic is that the last iteration of Top Chef was an excruciating 17 episodes long.
I've noticed that music formats change over time.
Well,
the actual reason is that season of Top Chef went on forever.
Well, that and the new season currently
yes,
wrapping up.
Yes, tell the truth. What was it really?
Hell's Kitchen.
Thank you. So we have gone
the result is not cooked! 20 episodes. Episodes long.
Yeah.
First
20.
It was music, then it was highbrow reality television, now it's Gordon Ramsay.
Right. Well, 20 episodes. And yeah. I was thinking, no reality show, maybe a Survivor can go 14, 15
yeah.
episodes, but absolutely no reality television show should ever be,
no.
preferably no more than a dozen episodes.
None should go 20, especially not Hell's Kitchen.
No. And so it sort of got me thinking, there are sort of these standard lengths of albums, there are sort of standard lengths of what works for a reality show.
Right.
Of course, that also applies to like movie comedies, animated films, movies in general, plays, I'm sure. Trey Graham, back me up on this.
Yeah.
So I thought we could go over what those standards are and what happens when people go over.
Uh-huh.
Longest running American-made film in film history. Anybody? Any guesses? Longest running time.
I have
of
no
any
idea.
American film.
Including documentaries?
Or? Including documentaries.
Oh, is it Wait, Showa?
So like Showa?
Well, okay, no, that's French. Showa was French.
Oh.
Ha.
Wow, you got me on a technicality.
I have no idea then.
No idea.
Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet
is
clocked
really
in at how much, Trey?
It's like 4 hours and 15 minutes, right?
4 hours and two.
Yeah.
4 hours
Holy
and change.
Cow.
Yeah, because he uses the unedited cut.
Right.
He uses all of the text that's available, basically.
So that's, is that too long?
Actually, I'm going to say no, because my argument about this is that the right length for any work of art is what the art will sustain.
Okay,
well,
but you actually
course.
Think...
That's the,
yeah, but
that's
what, okay,
the no
but
fun
there's
answer.
Also the question of what my buttocks will sustain.
Again, I will argue that that depends on how good the thing is.
Sure.
Because I will sit through Hamlet. I will sit through Angels in America.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat through The Expendables 2 this past weekend for the sake of a date.
Did you now?
Yeah. And I was in agonizing pain by the time it was over.
There are certain movies. I mean, Schindler's List is a 3-hour movie, and among other things, everybody talks about, oh, it's this, you know, it's this one of the great dramas, blah, blah, blah. That is just a fantastically entertaining, fast-moving film. Mm-hmm. I mean, entertaining is maybe the wrong word, but it is...
entertaining, Stephen Thompson, NPR.
But it is a fabulous piece of filmmaking.
Yes.
And so you don't...
Fabulous, entertaining.
So you don't notice the length. So yeah, there are certainly pacing issues. And just as there are double-length albums that are consistently really good, mm-hmm. that where you don't feel, you know, where it's not a problem that there are 30 songs.
Yeah, I would say that I do love the self-indulgent bloat, the pomposity. And by the way, if I didn't like self-indulgent pomposity, I would hate myself. So I really loved the thing about prog rock, for example. The Peter Gabriel Genesis, Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. That is an album just to soak in for hours because it's just so unabashed about how much it loves itself. And so you allow it. I see what you're saying there, Trey. But I do have a friend, Melanie, who has a rule, 2 hours. I give you 2 hours. Movie, play,
book,
album. No, well, it's okay. A little longer. She's not Evelyn Wood. But she says, you should be able to tell me the story in 2 hours. If not, you're wasting my time.
Hmm.
It is an extreme, position.
That but is about, a really extreme position.
But what of Pearl Harbor?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody would agree that Trey's theory is theoretically correct, that a book or movie or whatever of the right quality and done the right way can be of any length. I think there's no question that that's true. However, having said that, what I think does exist is a length past which you better have a good reason.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
I
yeah.
think that for me, with, for example, a comedy, a movie comedy, it's about an hour and 40. Mm-hmm. It's actually not very long. I think if you are doing a comedy, it doesn't mean you can't go over an hour and 40. It means if you're going over about an hour 40, hour 45, you ought to be thinking, am I sure that everything here absolutely needs to be here?
Yeah. Right.
For a drama, it's right around 2, maybe 2:10, where I start to think, justify yourself.
Well, the AMC blog has a list of the longest-running American-made films, and they're all dramas, of course. Hamlet, Iceman Cometh, Lawrence of Arabia, Ben-Hur, Return of the King, 3 hours and change.
That wow.
film. Giant, at exactly the same length as Return of the King, 201 mm-hmm. minutes. Titanic, of course, just a huge long list. All dramas. I think that's the...
Yeah.
I think filmmakers kind of get that.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, when you have epic comedies, you have Ishtar.
Right.
Right.
Unintentional, I should say unintentional.
Well, what was the... They used to make epic comedies, right? It's a Mad, 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 Mad
It's a Mad,
World?
Mad, Mad, Mad World is two... I think that's 2.5 hours. That's mm-hmm. That is a long movie, and
right.
I feel like there's not a consensus on that movie.
There is not a consensus on that movie.
There are people, certainly at the time, who felt it was a calamity.
Right? Yes.
The Hobbit started off as a just a single film to be directed by Peter Jackson after a lot of hemming and hawing, and, Guillermo del Toro got involved, and then they divided it into two. Recently, they decided to divide it into three films, a trilogy of this tiny, charming, little children's book.
Right.
What The Hobbit is not is epic. It is resolutely not. In fact, spoiler alert, in the biggest scene of the book, a giant battle between five armies, the main character gets knocked out at the beginning and spends the entire battle unconscious and comes awake after it. So what they're doing to stretch out the film is they're kind of going to the appendices at the back of the...
But that's your favorite part.
I was going to say, I mean, the maps and the...
Listen, 10-year-old Glenn got to the end of Return of the King and realized there's Appendix A of the Rings of Power and the Third Age. And just was like, there's more? And what the appendices are the early history of Middle-earth, what Gandalf is doing when he's not in the book, right. All this stuff that I just... loved.
Meanwhile, back at the motel.
But, and frankly, I think if we're going to be focused so much on the Shire, as this book is, or at least Hobbits, as this book is, you know, we're going to get a lot of that tin whistle of bucolic bumbling that Peter Jackson really loves, that little sound. So here's the thing. Peter Jackson, make these three films, Mazel Tov. The head of New Line is going to come to you at some point in the near future and say to you, so there's this book called The Silmarillion.
Oh, God.
Walk away from the table. Because The Silmarillion is written by J.R.R. Tolkien. It is the creation myth of Middle-earth. It is the Bible.
I see.
It reads like Leviticus, but it is the it is the creation myth of Middle-earth. And 10-year-old Glenn ate it up with a spoon. 44-year-old Glenn is like, is there something on TV? Because, my God, this is just, as a linguistic exercise, creating this world and peopling it with all these different characters and giving this history, all these names with umlauts and accents and, you know, and Manwë was exiled by Morgoth and all this stuff in the land of the Ten Rivers. Just stultifyingly dull prose. So I can't, I mean, like that is death. And it would also go on forever.
I have a feeling that the first Hobbit movie, like me, is only going to get up to the dinner party.
So okay, good. Great. More halfling hate speech. Great. Great. Why not?
But so what you're saying is that even this book that you love has enough adjacent crap.
Really think it remains to be seen, because tonally these two things don't go together. To try to take this bucolic simple story and shoot it through with dread as this appendices is, and as you know, we're leading up to the horrible events of the Lord of the Rings. It's just a much more charming, smaller story. So
plus they had all that stuff with Jar Jar Binks.
Yes, it's there will be a Jar Jar. There will be a Hobbit Jar Jar.
What is the name of the third? They put out the names. Something like the Revenge of Smaug.
Okay, it's an unexpected journey. That's the first one coming out in 2012. There's the Desolation of Smaug in 2013. Smaug. Shut up. And
nothing.
There's There and Back Again, which is coming out in 2014.
I see. And none of them are called A Nice Day for a Tea Party.
No, none of them are. None of them are. Let's sing songs about cutlery. No.
Let's sing songs about plates. Uh-huh. My favorite part. Uh-huh. My favorite part. Well, I will say this. I notice this with movies, that in addition to comedies and dramas, anything that sort of is supposed to be just entertaining me, mm-hmm. like anything that has the sole purpose of just diverting me,
right?
I get tired of being diverted after about that hour and 45. So, sure. So regardless of genre, if you don't have a larger point...
I get tired of being diverted. The mantra.
If you don't have a larger point, right. Then after maybe a little short of 2 hours, I start to be like, okay, now I really need to go do something more productive.
Well, and here's where I actually throw a question sort of open to listeners and to you guys as well. I always wonder if my love of compact entertainment, like albums that are 36 minutes long.
You're going to say like seasons of Bachelor.
For example, The Littlest Groom was only 2 episodes. No, but I mean an album that is very concise. When I get an album that is like, oh my God, it's 9 songs in 34 minutes, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I feel like they pre-cut the fat. It better be good. But I'm sort of going to get all the good stuff. And the experience of listening to it, it just feels like I'm so much less likely to wander. And here's what I wonder. Is that my reaction because I get it for free and listening to it is my job?
Right. And when the other thing is the logistics of listening to things kind of in bulk. Mm-hmm. I always wonder whether they affect that, for example. Because just today, Trey and I were talking. Trey and I are headed to the Toronto Film Festival, where we will be next week at this time. And we were talking about making up our schedules, and one of the things that I mentioned today is that when you're trying to make up a tight schedule at a film festival where you're trying to fit in a lot of movies, when you see one that's like 2.5 hours, it's like, maybe I won't go to that one.
Yeah, I could see.
Because it's like, that's going to throw off my whole day.
Well, it's like a movie and a half.
Yeah.
Oh, true. I have been heard to exclaim when I walk into a theater to see a play that I'm not familiar with, when I look at the program and see 90 minutes, no intermission, I have been heard to exclaim, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Because
2
intermissions is sort of deadly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It does.
It does occasionally. There are still plays out there, believe it or not, that come with 2 intermissions.
Yeah, that would...
Ugh. Good grief.
Not many.
I guess I wonder if the bias, I mean, you go to plays often for work. I mean, you love the theater,
yes,
and you go to the theater for pleasure.
And I wanted to, yes.
I listen to music for pleasure.
It is absolutely connected to what you were saying
about
being asked to do it and, you know, then file a report.
But I listen to music for pleasure, and part of that job, which is very much working in the mines, involves
right.
listening to dozens and hundreds and whatever of albums, and you really want to be able to graze across as many different artists and genres and, you know, and sounds as possible. And if you have to listen, like I just got the new Bob Dylan and it's 68 minutes long.
I want to stress, none of us think these are real problems.
Right.
Right.
It's not like I'm like, oh my gosh, that comedy was 2 hours and 10 minutes. Poor me. Yeah. I have a complaint. Yeah. We're just talking about sort of ideally to get the peak kind of return on your investment.
No,
of
that
time.
Bob Dylan record is my crown of thorns.
Right. Well, what about television? Because we've talked a little bit. You've talked a little bit, Linda Holmes, about how you don't judge by the very first episode. You give a show some time. You let a story arc play out.
Absolutely.
I feel the same way about a comic series. I won't judge by the first issue. I have to wait for the first story arc to play out. But what about how more and more American shows are adopting the British model of 13 episodes and out, or sometimes six.
I had a conversation at one time with Sean Ryan, who was the showrunner of The Shield and is about to be the showrunner of a show called Last Resort, and has also done some stuff, Terriers, and some other stuff that was very good. And we were talking about the 22-episode season versus the 13-episode season. And my recollection of the conversation, I can't guarantee I'm quoting him directly, but my recollection of the conversation was, essentially he said, anytime you do a 22-episode season, there's a period somewhere around, like, 16 to 18 where you're just dragging.
Yep.
Because it's not a natural number. It's a number that comes out of TV scheduling. So that any time you were doing that, you would get kind of your second wind in those last couple episodes.
Right.
But that there would be this kind of, like, dead area. Mm-hmm. And he sort of said, if you go back and look at a lot of even good TV shows, you'll find that, like, there's this lag in the what was originally the kind of the spring.
Think about what a gigantic plotting exercise that is.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't necessarily, the way, if you have a book that's plotted out that far ahead, you can then go back into a book and chop, 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 chop.
Well, and what
you can't do as well with TV.
And with the 13, I think 13 episodes tends to be enough time to sort of, you get a little setup, and then you get a little climactic conflict, and then you get a little denouement, and then you're done.
Yeah. Well, even shows that mix an overarching mythology for the season and individual episodes done in one episode, like Torchwood and Doctor Who, for example, in the British model, do it really well. My theory was, well, you know, if we had this in X-Files time, X-Files would be an even better show because a lot of that dead weight would be cut out. But then I thought, well, the dead weight's kind of what I really like.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
I kind of like Home
it
and
was a
Bad
little
Blood.
Different, yes.
Very different.
That was a little
different.
Small potatoes and stuff like that. Mm. That was a little different.
Yeah.
Because I think some shows really thrive on that. But if you're talking about tightly plotted shows, yes, I think the 13-episode season is essentially intrinsically superior.
Right, and
to
Justified
the
is doing this really well. Breaking Bad is doing this really well.
It's interesting because Breaking Bad is kind of doing these two 8-episode mini-seasons, one of which just ended. And I've actually been a little, I feel like it's thrown them off. I feel like these last eight, although the show still is very skillfully done, I feel like plot-wise, their rhythms are off, and I think it's because they were trying to create a set of eight, which is now a little too small for their storytelling.
Well, and I would think that there would be a lot of rev, kind of waiting for the last eight.
To me, yes, because on the one hand, some of these episodes have felt rushed, like they're trying to fit 13 into eight. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's eight now and eight next summer, which are contractually being treated as one season.
Right.
It's a split season. So on the one hand, it's 13 pressed down to eight. On the other hand, it's 13 stretched out
to
over
16,
a year. And, you know, and so it's both kind of slow and rushed.
Right.
And it doesn't mean I don't still love it, because I absolutely still love it. Please don't email me. I absolutely still love it. It's just that I feel like the eight episodes, the eight and eight, is not serving them quite as well as the 13 episode structure.
Well, and I think anytime you go to a length that is not commonly precedented, you're kind of forced to disrupt the rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right, so riddle me this on the subject of books. I don't do this with books I'm reviewing, obviously, but if I'm reading a very, very long book and there are lengthy passages of description.
Yes.
And in between that morass of words, there are little islands of dialogue that you are pretty reasonably certain summarizes all these descriptions. Do you leap, flit from bit of dialogue to bit of dialogue?
I mean, it partly depends on, I don't if I'm trying to genuinely
soak up a writing
soak
style.
It up as literature.
Yeah.
I've certainly done that with, say, the eating scenes in the Game of Thrones.
Sure,
books,
sure, exactly.
Those are just like long lists exotic foods.
I always feel guilty about it because I skip over and I always think, like, they probably worked really hard on this. I feel like I should read it,
I was
and yet
say,
I'm not going to.
If I'm in a theater watching a 2-hour and 45-minute movie and 15 minutes in I have to pee, I will hop one leg up and down for 2.5 hours so as not to walk out and miss a minute of it.
There's an app for that.
There's an app for what?
It's called Run P, and it tells you when it's a good time to leave the movie.
Wow. There's an app for everything.
Then I would have to get an app.
That's actually one of the ways in which listening to an audiobook is different from
reading,
is that you do not, it's completely linear, and everything is sort of assigned equal importance, because I will not actually fast forward in an audiobook, because you can't know for sure.
Right.
So I will listen to the whole thing, and so there are certain kinds of books that I don't like to listen to in that way, because I am forced to do absolutely no skimming.
Right, but the audiobook equivalent of skimming is spacing out. And Lord knows, in an audiobook, I do that entirely too often.
I do, but the problem with that is that's actually problematic, because, again, you don't really know what you missed, and it's not as convenient to go back and be like, oh, I've been staring at this same spot on the page for the last 4 minutes. I should figure out where I am, and did I mindlessly turn the page, and have I not read anything? But that's one of the things about audiobooks, is that skimming is a lot harder. So I tend to like audiobooks for things that move fairly quickly and breezily. Mm-hmm. And I tried to listen to Team of Rivals about Abraham Lincoln's
cabinet.
Oh my gosh. I don't want to say that I would ever skip any historical information, but oh my gosh, I gave up. I was like, I'm not going to make it.
Yeah,
like,
I have had the audiobook of Walter Isaacson's Ben Franklin biography for about 4 years now.
Yeah, same deal.
Yeah.
Same deal. So what you should all do is you should think about, first of all, what heathens we are before suggesting that there's any kind of ideal length for anything, because that's wrong. And small-minded and heathen-y.
No, because I've had a suitable boy sitting on my bookshelf for more than a decade, and it's never going to get read.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the book.
But you should
come and find us on you should come and find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/PCHH, or find us on the blog at npr.org/PCHH, and tell us sort of how you feel about, you know, what's too long, what's too short. Are we giving short shrift to the 1,000-page Stephen King brick book, which is almost certainly too long in most circumstances? It's too long. So find us and let us know what you think. Now, we have reached the middle part of our show, where sometimes I like to administer a quiz, a game. We have a quiz. We have a game. Now, I had a little computer mishap today, which resulted in one version of this game being lost. So I had to redo it. So it's not quite as extensive as it was originally going to be. But we'll do it. We'll do it anyway. This game is called Vegan Restaurant or Perfume/Cologne.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And these are all vegan restaurants and perfume/colognes that I found on the internet.
These are coincidentally, these are two of my areas of expertise.
I was trying to play into your strengths here. So I will name the thing, and you will say whether it is a vegan restaurant or a perfume/cologne. Are we ready?
Okay. Ready. Are we shouting out? We're going around the table.
We'll go around the table.
All right.
I'll go. Glenn Weldon.
Yeah.
Thrive.
Oh. That's got to be a cologne.
That is a vegan restaurant.
I was going to guess vegan restaurant.
Trey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Blossom du Jour.
That's a cologne.
That is also a vegan restaurant.
No.
I would have guessed cologne on that one.
Vegan restaurant. Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Green Tea.
You know what? You are such a rascal that I'm going to say perfume/cologne.
It is a perfume/cologne.
It's entirely because you're a rascal, though.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Glenn Weldon, Truly.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cologne.
It is a vegan restaurant. In fact, its full name is Truly a Vegan Restaurant.
Well, that would have given me a clue.
Truly, colon.
I demand the iron name.
Truly, colon, a vegan restaurant.
Colon.
Trey Graham, Pure.
Oh, I want it to be a vegan restaurant.
It is a vegan restaurant.
Yay!
There's got to be a cologne. There's got to be a perfume called Pure.
I bet there is.
There might be.
All right.
Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Millennium.
Ugh. I am going to say vegan restaurant.
It is a vegan restaurant.
God, I'm so smart. If you guys notice how smart I am.
Glenn Weldon. Cuba Orange.
God, I'm just going to say it again. It's a perfume/cologne.
It is a perfume.
All right.
Cuba Orange for men, specifically.
Wow.
Trey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Curve.
That's a gym.
Curve.
Oh,
no,
man.
Googling.
I'm
I see
Googling.
You on your phone.
I am not Googling.
He's texting.
Texting.
He's just bored.
No. What is it again?
Curve.
Curve. It is, well, I was distracted by Thompson and his gym crack.
if I had a nickel.
I don't think that's what you meant to say.
Oh, boy.
wow. Okay.
Perfume / cologne.
It is a perfume / cologne. That is correct. And finally, Stephen Thompson,
yes.
Body and Soul.
Vegan restaurant.
Vegan restaurant.
Yay.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Did I get all of mine right?
You have to admit, it's a pretty good game.
That is a good
game.
Yeah.
That was uncanny.
Yeah. Now, this is another game that I just want to point out. Stephen's favorite thing whenever we play a game is to ponder the fact that it came from my brain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is another one where I just want
to... The entire basis of how I'm so good at these.
I just want to, stress that, once again, it came from my brain. So I can't, unfortunately, offer to the folks at home to play Vegan Restaurant or Perfume on our Facebook page, but nevertheless,
we'll
you got to admit it was fun. You have to admit it was fun. And you can look up, any of these vegan restaurants. As far as I know, it's accurate. Please don't go and find that there's, beef fat and then get angry at me. I'm telling you, my research showed... vegan restaurant.
Gotcha.
So that brings us to our final segment, what is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Okay. My inventory of things that I like despite the fact that I am me includes the 2006 film Once. I haven't talked about it on the show here a lot because y'all have talked about it on the show a lot, and I have a feeling the NPR demo is pretty much down with this movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you're not...
They've certainly been told about it.
They've certainly been told about it. It's about a pair of musicians, a Irish man and a Czech woman who meet in Dublin, have romantic tension, and in the process of hanging out together over a course of a few days, create a demo of his music. That's the plot. What the film is really about, though, is people having feelings. And if I had to put a list of the two things I don't care much about, people and feelings would be near the top of the list. But
they're muted feelings, though.
They are.
They're not too feelingsy.
They're not too feelingsy, which I think is why it sneaks in under the radar. Mm-hmm. But I love this film. I love the music, of course. I love the performances. I also love the scale of this film. It's mm-hmm. very contained, if that makes any sense. So when the time came to decide what we're going to take Mom to up in New York City, when we take her to a couple Broadway shows, because gay, I decided...
You, not Mom.
Yes, I decided that Once the musical would be a good choice. It seemed Mom-appropriate. It seemed Mom-ready, because it won the Tony. She can go back to Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, mushroom capital of the world, tell her friends that she saw the musical that won the Tony. She'll like the music. Who won't like that music? It's great music. And, it's a nice story. I figured, Mom ready. I also figured I would be the one, even though I like the music, be sitting there sort of suffering a noble silence as the good son.
Yeah.
Because I certainly didn't see the need for this show.
Sure.
You watch that film once, and the thing you're not thinking is jazz hands, more jazz hands. It's mm-hmm. just not a thing you think. Mm-hmm. And that number, if you recall, in this year's Tonys, where they excerpted mm-hmm. the song Gold, so many things were kind of red flags about that number as it was presented on the Tonys. A, the guy playing the male lead is this model handsome, hunky, muscle dude with perfect teeth. And say what you will about Glenn Hansard, that description does not fit.
Oh, I have a few things to say, though.
B,
they're all good.
The guy who wrote those songs does not look like that guy. I'm sorry. That doesn't work. That just felt like a very Broadway fakey
Glenn
thing.
Glenn Weldon.
Also.
The things you don't know.
Also, yeah. There's the actress playing the female lead in the show, in that scene on the Tonys, comes out to the stage and just sort of looks around all sort of wide-eyed and goggle-eyed and dewy. And that is not the character. I'm sorry. That is just absolutely not. So I went in prepared, shields up. What I was not prepared for is how... this is not simply an adaptation of the movie.
Oh, no, it's a complete reinterpretation.
It is an interpretation from the ground up.
Yep.
It is theatrical in the classic, in every sense of the word. It is bigger, has to be, couldn't help but be. It is broader. There's more characters, there's more storylines, there are more jokes. But it is filled with this really economical, efficient... I don't want to say choreography because that's, you think, Robin Williams going, Martha Graham.
Right.
But it's not that. It's movement. It's about doing what music does, which is expressing feelings.
Oh,
I guess is what I'm saying. In the process of turning this thing onto into a Broadway show, they have made it something completely different. It helped that the guy playing the male lead was not the handsome muscle dude, but the understudy by the name of Ben Hope, who was great. Also... the actress Kristen Milioti, who plays the female lead, got really short shrift by that Tony scene because she is fantastic.
She's the best discovery she's awesome. She's completely fantastic.
I think Trey agrees with you.
Yes. Okay, so the film, let's sum up. The film is sweeter. The show is funnier. And I think I know where my biases lie. So once the musical, it's not just for tourist buses from Leisure Worlds. Also not just for gays.
I'm just quoting
in. And I just want to come back in defense of Steve Kazee, who is the guy who plays the lead, the male lead. He's terrific in the show. He is handsome, but he sells the brokenhearted part of that character so well that you believe he could write those songs.
Yeah. If we've learned anything, it's that the terribly, terribly attractive people are not worth listening to.
I think that, I would have to take issue with your guy needs to be somehow flawed to write those songs.
Can we say schlubby? You'll get
schlubby!
I believe the only appropriate description of Glenn Hansard is agreeably muppety.
There we go.
You people are out of your... I'm just not even going to talk about it because none of you understand. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Well, you kind of gave it away. I am presently being made happy by our joint preparations for traveling to Toronto and seeing as many films as we can cram into 7 days, which at this point is looking like about 25.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really particularly looking forward to the possibility that we will have a remote podcast where you and I and our friend Bob Mondello will be in Toronto talking to these yokels.
We hope.
All the logistics work out, that's what we're going to try to do.
Otherwise, next week you're going to be listening to the Stephen and Glenn show.
Yep.
it's our morning zoo. We have Jess Gittner over on sound effects.
It'll be a call-in like love line.
So that plus something that everyone else can access. I watched the pilot for The Mindy Project today. It's Mindy Kaling's new show. I gather Linda was not as big a fan as I was, but I got several giggles out of it. Also, it's chock-a-block with man candy. It's just chock full of man candy. There's some handsome fellows on that show.
I see.
You know how I feel about them. it's streaming on Hulu. You can watch the pilot in advance of its broadcast.
It's not bad. I just wasn't tickled by it. And it has to do with the fact that I had high hopes for it because I like Mindy Kaling.
Yeah,
it just didn't hit for me. She's too unlikable. It's not unlikable in the fun arch way. To me, it's just unlikable in the I don't wish to spend time with this
with
person
this character,
kind
yeah.
of way. So it needs better balance to me. It's a little off. But, you know, talented people and, you know, there's always hope.
I'm guessing they're going to find their stride.
Could be. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, first a programming note. On last week's episode, I referred to The Family Dog, mm-hmm. and the pilot of the short-lived series was on Amazing Stories. Someone popped up on Facebook to point out that Amazing Stories is on Netflix.
Oh.
And if you're looking for The Family Dog episode that I was raving about, it is Season 2, Episode 16.
Oh, cool.
Second of all, Glenn Hansard is one of the most charismatic performers I've ever encountered. I've seen his band The Frames in concert 30 times.
Sure, I'm not like saying that. I'm saying he's a good-looking dude.
I'm not speaking to his looks.
I'm saying,
for those who like Once and are interested in going back and exploring some of his music, I recommend starting with an album called Setlist by the band The Frames. Linda, you'll back me up.
I absolutely will.
Freaking amazing.
I absolutely will. I would also point out while we're on this topic that if you did like Once, the other thing to look for is the documentary The Swell Season, which is streaming on Netflix, which I also think is wonderful, which is about the tour that they did after the movie and sort of as they were becoming very successful. it's a kind of a tour documentary, but it's also kind of a relationship documentary. It's wonderful. My parents just recently watched it and thought it was awesome. So,
see,
yeah.
Moms.
So, wait, I'm sorry. We're talking about things that are making me happy.
Yeah, right go now. Ahead. I was throwing in a recommendation. You know what makes you happy when I talk? Go ahead.
Right. The Swell Season documentary, absolutely. And all things Glenn Hansard. Other than that, I have to admit that what's making me happy are a whole bunch of the return of a whole bunch of things that have made me happy on this show too many times to mention. Like football, for example. On Wisconsin, go Pack, go. And a topic I've discussed almost as much as football, Eve Barsley of Clemson. And I know I'm going to get giggles.
It's neck and neck, man.
Listen, I know. And that's why I'm throwing it in at the end there with a bunch of other stuff.
So no one will notice.
But
it's neck and neck, buddy.
Listen, on Eve Barsley's Bandcamp page, you can download 40 new songs. It's called Songs We Made. It's part of this project. I've talked about it on the show before, where you can commission him to write a song about you or somebody you want him to write a song about.
You should write a song called You Make Me Happy, Eve Barsley.
I've been listening to them in the last couple days in the car, and they're really, really beautiful. And what's interesting is that cumulatively, they really add up to a bunch of sort of portraits in miniature that are very, very affecting and beautiful. And I know I've talked about this guy way too many times to get away with, but Songs We Made, Eve Barsley. We'll throw a link on the Facebook page and on the blog.
I'm just giving you a hard time, buddy. You know I back you up on this. So what is making me happy this week? I like to announce my recent TV marathons. That's my new thing. Been watching a bunch of old Survivor, which is a favorite of mine. I like to go back and watch the great moments when the bad people got their comeuppance. I can just watch them over and over and over and over.
Oh, Survivor Fiji.
Survivor Fiji, yeah. Poor Edgardo. Some of you know what I am talking about. Also, making me happy this week, we got a very, very nice letter in the mail that I want to give a quick shout out to Eric in Frankfurt, who sent us an unusually just kind of thorough and thoughtful and very considerate and kind note that we really enjoyed that we sort of passed around, you know. And you know, whenever people go to the trouble to send you an actual handwritten letter all the way from Germany, I always feel like, well, let's acknowledge that. That's a dying art, the longhand letter from Germany. So thanks, Eric.
Longhand letters from other places can suck it.
Absolutely. Also making me happy this week, my mother is continuing her quest to become completely bionic. And has got herself a new knee, I don't think she'll mind me saying. So she has come through it with flying colors. She's doing great. So I just want to say, as always, making me happy is my mom being the best, because she is. So that is making me happy. And I shout out my mother in defiance of the Zaxxon rule.
Well, I just want to know, you said she was the best. You went after I spoke, so you knew I couldn't rebut.
That's right.
That fact. Because my mother is, in fact, the best.
Your mother is the second best.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Absolutely.
Hey, the Nats are in the lead.
Wow, sports guy. Wow, sporty sport.
Oh, enough about sports, Trey.
Enough about sports, Trey. So, you know, that's kind of my grab bag of what's been making me happy this week. It has definitely been a hectic week of preparation for Toronto, so I'm also being made happy about that. And hopefully, that's what we're going to be talking about this time next week. We'll be having a chat about some great movies from some people that you've heard of and maybe some people that you haven't heard of. And my guess is I'm going to have at least one story about having a panic attack while standing in line.
Or falling down.
Or falling down? I'm hoping that doesn't happen.
Let's hope.
Wait, you're planning to push her, aren't you?
I'm just going to hope not to sprain my ankle. That's all there is to it. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me in the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, WELDON. You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, GITNER. You can follow our esteemed producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. It's making you happy right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And we will hopefully all be together again next week.